There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chops-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. And listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Meyer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was, 30 minutes after last week's special Royal Rumble 1-hour edition. Back to Nice and Easy with arguably, possibly, one of the shortest episodes I've ever done. A complete rebound. We'll say, hey, it's short for you. I record about 45 minutes regardless. But sometimes you can just tell that there's just not a lot of content. So if there's 45 minutes, it's one of those where in the edit, I'll be like, ugh, this is tangenty and the flow's crap. So I end up cutting it. So last week, I did a 90-minute recording and pumped out like a 55-minute show. That was too much. Turns out for this style, it's this style of podcast, style of show with this amount of editing, that it's probably better just to keep it shorter. But as you can tell by my rambling here and my freeness just to keep on talking, not a lot to talk about this week. Last week was the aftermath of the Royal Rumble. This week is keeping things going, because I don't record this week till Thursday. So I got to see like a lot of the reactions to stuff before seeing the show itself. By that I just mean I got a genuine consensus of how was the show received, rather than anything specific that happened on it. And it seemed to be the consensus was, hey, it's fine, innit? Carried things going, informed us that certain storylines are happening, certain characters are going certain directions. Wasn't particularly thrilling. When I think I've said it before, that for me, that's absolutely fine. If your show is like 2 hours or 1 hour, when it's a 3-hour show, you really feel it, and it's a massive detractor. The fact that it's fine, you really start to feel it, and the show feels worse than it is when it's 3 hours of perfectly okay television. And that was Raw. SmackDown was their first one after the Royal Rumble, so there's a bit more to that. It's close to how Raw felt. Just that it felt more like a reverberation from Raw. So Raw was like the big show after the Rumble. And this one was more of a continuation of that. So SmackDown felt less hot. And then Raw, that I'm going to talk about this episode, felt very tepid. Very much like this was the lull before we kick up a little bit to the Elimination Chamber. And then the chamber itself would be like the actual kick into WrestleMania gear. But at least that's how they've used it in the past. But anyway, let's jump on over to Memphis, Tennessee to start with Smackers at 2 hours and 3 minutes on Netflix for me. Totally not that length. If you recorded it on SmackDown, if you're watching live, like I don't know how many times I need to say it, don't watch WWE shows live. But if you're not watching live, yeah, your show version was way shorter than my my recorded version on Netflix. Anyway, let's jump on over to Friday Night SmackDown to little chinwag about Jey Uso and Cody Rhodes. The Men's Rumble winner opened the show again. The one more time gimmick from the fans seems to have become immediately a repeatable thing, with all the WWE crowds now wanting to do it. The Jey Uso's like, moves has come out, they're all doing the yeet stuff. I was talking to Ash of Wrestling Shorts about it, about the whole thing. I was like, oh, are you on the Jey Uso train? I was like, well, yeah, but it's like a kinetic train where it's like driven by the movements. And then realised, like, oh, wait, that would be those little minecart things, pushing the handle up and down. One person on the left and right of it is pushing the handle up and down. Just doing the yeet on that to keep it going. So anyway, so a yeet trains all the way down through the crowd, does the little thing with the kids, and it's always adorable. Or at least it's been like 2 weeks of it so far, and it's continued to be adorable. We'll see if it outstays its welcome. Right now, it continues to be adorable. He gets into the ring, and he's quiet down, and gets his microphone, and then it leads into the fans saying to do it one more time, so he goes into an encore, starts doing his dance. This was the second show in a row that happened, and I'm like, okay, so this has become the latest conditioned response, which is that every crowd's going to want to be a part of, and every crowd's going to jump on, going to see see it every episode. What happened on Raw, I thought, immediately made what happens here on SmackDown way better. Because watching it on SmackDown, I was like, oh, that's what I mean, but it feels like a reverberation show from Raw, where it's an echo of the same stuff. So like, Jey Uso confronted Gunther, and he said he's going to confront Cody. Charlotte Flair also confronted one champion, and now it's going to confront the other. And he got the similar response from the crowd for Jey Uso, where, he saw him do the encore thing, and this crowd goes, hey, well, we want to do that too. So then Raw's crowd also wanted to do it, and WWE, they used the conditioning immediately to their own good. And I was like, yes, if you're going to use conditioning, do what they do on this, and I'll get to it when I talk about Raw later. So the fans were all happy, they got their Jey Uso little dance. Time to call out Cody the Bestie. Whoa, there, lad. We're talking about a title match in WrestleMania here. Let's just, take things seriously. Cody stating, we've had a libation or two together, but if we're going to have fun tonight in Memphis, let's make it the last time. Then down that road, if you are going to choose me, it's going to have to be serious from here on out. Which then calls out the actual serious people. Jacob Fatu out with Tama Tonga. He may be in a little mid-card thing with Strowman, but this show here on SmackDown showed us that we're still going to get these little statements of intent regarding Jacob Fatu. And they're starting as well to give him mic time. Jay, if anyone were to be the one to bring that title back to our family, it sure as hell wouldn't be your ass. Enough to anger Jay and swing us into a tag team setup brawl for the main event tag match. After which, technically, Jacob Fatu was proven 100% correctly because he goes after Gunther. Well, at least on Raw, they gave us a reason why Jay will go after Gunther. The main event of Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso versus Tama Tonga and Jacob Fatu. 9 minutes till we're off the air, so get to it, chaps. No mucking about. Within the first minute, we had Fatu fending off a Cody Cutter for his ad break beat of baddie dominance. A pretty standard teddy tag main, but all the acts are so incredibly over. So, like, everything is getting such great reactions. And Tama Tonga's also there, but he's there for a reason. To quote a former person that I worked with over at Lots of Pain / Wrestling Headlines, Jan, would be like, why is Chase Owens in the Bullet Club? Well, somebody needs to take the pinfall. Why is Tama Tonga in this main event match? Somebody's got to take the pin. Sure as hell isn't going to be Cody Rhodes. Sure as hell isn't going to be the Royal Rumble winner. And we're heating up Jacob Fatu now, so it's not going to be him. So in steps Tama Tonga. Adding to the fact of heating up Jacob Fatu, the big man got to kick out of a super Cody Cutter at one, and it was Fatu who pushed Cody off the top rope, but Tama Tonga doesn't really have a finisher, so couldn't really capitalise. So Fatu rope rebounded too many times. Uso able to dive and keep the man away long enough for Rhodes to cross Tama for the win. We got a little dance, and we got Jacob Fatu kept away at the key moment, and that's when you separate them long enough, you keep Jacob Fatu away for even just a few more seconds, and that's how Tama Tonga loses the match. But within a relatively quick just a shift of focus, you got Jey Uso and Cody Rhodes celebrating for a bit. What we go off air with, though, Solo Sikoa returning and jumping Cody. Like, hey, the man needs a Mania Road villain to beat, so I guess why not beat Solo Sikoa again? Why not? Why not beat him this time? I feel like this is a good setup just to have Solo Sikoa actually be Solo. Which sounds like, I think I've accidentally double meaning to that. As in, he has to be his true self and also alone. He's Solo Sikoa. The way he was being built up in the Bloodline, he did not scream an act that was going to have, like, bodyguard people around him. That act didn't really feel like it fitted Solo Sikoa. Whilst maybe if he's a grumpy loner and he's got all that, he's not got the Bloodline around him at all, you really kind of unleash him and don't let him fall back on those villain booking tropes where he's got the faction just to fall on the entire time. At least that's the hope I got. And also, this is just like a little thing. Maybe they do the match immediately at the Elimination Chamber, so we're not really going to get much of a build anyway, possibly. They just immediately do it at the Chamber, blast past it. Okay, cool, that's that dealt with, move on. Gives Cody somebody to beat, possibly give Solo a little kick for his character in a new direction. It's fair to say, you can't give Jacob Fatu the mega push whilst also keeping Solo Sikoa as the leader of the faction. What they're doing right now with the current dynamic, it works. Just keep them somewhat separate. But the entire point of this night was to tease, is Jey Uso going to go after Cody? Just to keep that debate up in the air till Monday. Keep uploading a little bit more. Which is why I said it kind of felt like a reverberation from Raw. Where you got, what is Jey Uso's decision going to be? And then SmackDown went, what is Jey Uso's decision going to be? So he's got to keep the idea floating until Monday. Which meant that this wasn't like the most exciting show in the world, but it was still better than the Raw I'm going to cover. Charlotte Flair and Tiffany Stratton, just to do the other side of that coin. A mixture of cheers and boos, just like on Raw for Flair, where she then lent into it a bit more before ragging on the division for just being a bit shit. So, of course, she won the Rumble. I was like, yeah, who else was going to win? Who else has been built up to possibly beat? Like, who? Nobody. The two favourites, neither of them were in the current kind of building and contention and stuff, which is, you know, is a knock on the current state and building of the division. But they have made one star. Tiffany Stratton, not mincing words. You got injured. people cared for, like, a day. Then WWE entered its hottest period without you. Which is a note I'm, like, still interested by. I think I said it last week when Charlotte Flair got booed on Raw. Where it's just like, yeah, the Charlotte character, we kind of just got tighter, there's the low Charlotte wins era. That was all before the Triple H era. There hasn't been a run of Charlotte rejuvenate her character or anything during Triple H's era. And she's always delivered, like, great matches when it comes to those peak moments, but the character just got so tired. It just felt like it needed something. And her leaning into this character where it's like, I'm almost a relic from a past era now. The other characters that are now coming up, yeah, the new hotter things have come through, and they're the ones with the fire and the momentum. So how does Charlotte Flair, who still considers herself the greatest wrestler in the world, and whatever, she deserves to be on top and all of that, how does she fit into this current dynamic where WWE's kind of moved on in the Triple H era? So I am interested in her character, and the fact that they're leaning into it like they are currently, or the way that I kind of read it was more, it felt like they were gauging. Like Charlotte's reply to Tiffany Stratton, it felt generic and dated, like a scripted Vince piece of shit something. Was that her initial response? Like, not really in reply to anything that the other said, just a thing which, a statement that sounds cool to make yourself look good. But because of what happened here, it felt like that's the point, in a way, that it's generic and it's dated, purposely shifts you into booing Charlotte Flair. Which led me to think, oh, are they, like, they're doing this, but they're kind of gauging reactions as well, just shifting from show to show before they've fully committed. Because Tiffany Stratton is also, she's beloved, but she's technically a bad guy, so which way are we going to go? I felt like, I do think this was, like, very foreseeable, because I think there was a talk beforehand that people quite worried that Flair might get booed at the Rumble, but WWE crowds are kind of just happy to see the thing. So the fact Charlotte is getting booed is quite a big thing, with a very, very positive crowd. That anti-Charlotte sentiment still exists, even though she's been basically gone for, like, almost 2 years. She was there for the initial trips kind of building to WrestleMania with the match against Rhea Ripley for the Hollywood WrestleMania. But that was like, Vince was very much still had his fingers in the bucket at that point. So we've not had a proper Triple H era Charlotte Flair run. These first 2 weeks have kind of convinced me that it's possible. You can take this down an interesting road. But there's also LOL Charlotte wins. You can also do that. So it depends where they're going to go. But the crowd has evidently told them, we are not going to cheer for Charlotte Flair. And her leaning into whether you cheer me or you boo me is a great way just to get disliked. It never makes you cheer or whatever. It works really well. Or you don't understand, I went through this hardship. Again, another way just to get them to boo you. which is why I'm just like, no, I trust the current era enough for stuff like this specifically to know where they're leaning, or at least when the reaction happens to start to shift. But she's used to being the star maker, completely unable to recognise the women's division has moved on without her, which is an interesting story. She still sees herself the star, but the industry's moved on. The likes of Rhea Ripley and Tiffany Stratton aren't looking at her as the star-making machine. They're almost looking at her with, I was going to say, is it pity? But is it just a bit of disdain? It's like, we've moved on. Kind of thing, and you think you're above us. It works really well as a heel character. Just lean more into it. Flair as both a rightfully cocky competitor and this person who's the industry's moved past her. I really like that clash. There is an interesting story you can tell here. And the other things I really want to talk about, which is going to be the same on Monday Night Raw as well, are the Elimination Chamber qualifying matches, as we just directly, immediately build to the Chamber. You haven't got any time after the Rumble to kind of really soak it in. Like, the entire show doesn't become oh, do you remember the Rumble? Because they haven't got time. They've got to immediately, look, with Toronto soon, but we've got to get to it. First one, LA Knight versus Drew McIntyre versus Jimmy Uso. Drew McIntyre, the final lad drafted before the closing of the unspecified and unspecific transfer window. That's kind of, but not really, been going on after the Netflix debut. Case in point, I think this might be the first time I've mentioned it in these reviews. It's not talked about it. Drew got a I'm on SmackDown Now promo before the match. Raw is a toxic workplace, and Nick Aldis has given me the room to be me. Finally setting his sights on the undisputed WWE Championship. But this isn't just a Drew promo bit before the match. Everybody gets the jab. Jimmy Uso got the see, I can be funny too lines. LA Knight, the actual jabs that actually hit somewhere. Looking into the camera with a it's okay to cry mental health promo. I'm watching this going, oh, this is very cheesy and corny. But with you, Drew, it's every goddamn day, you big crybaby. It's like, okay, you went all serious. But I felt like he brought it home for the actual second half of it. It was a very, very corny, but almost like a directed point to swing. Possibly was a bit too realistic with the cut to camera. The pause for the crowd to applaud him and like, yeah, I'm altruistic, yeah. Yeah, that's me. I'm such a good guy. But you, Joe, you suck. He didn't do the switch with enough. I'm doing it with way more venom than he did. He's trying to be like more charismatic and entertainer. And they put a bit of disdain in it. No yeet. Yeah. WWE fans just like to chant things. So this match was right in their element. Drew was there as a big angry man to put a stop to all of that, though. Like, why are you booing Tennessee? He's cutting to the wrestling. Why is this bad? Things are more heated after the ad break. The lads swung in their signatures. And you know we've kicked into final gear when there's a kipper. Oh, you'll see that on these shows. Claymore beaten to the shot by Big Jim's superkick. A Flo eventually landing one on night two. But Drew pulled out the poor ref Charles after the Uso splash, and no finish there. The second Uso splash was met with LA knees, then a nice swinging finish with Knight going for the BFT onto Jimmy, only to get claymored in the back of the head. Jimmy getting proxy BFT'd. Anyway, he's like, ah, I'll take a bump too. Knight out for the count, and it's big sexy Drew McIntyre going to Toronto and the chamber as they stack the chamber. I think the addition of John Cena's kind of really convinced him just to stack these big matches. Really does make it feel like reverberation again, but it's that next stage after the Royal Rumble is that where you also stack the chamber. You got CM Punk, Drew McIntyre, John Cena, like really make it feel like a big deal. On the women's side of the chamber, hey, at least for the women's elimination chamber, they're remembering to actually build it compared to the Rumble, where I think the quality of the women's Rumble spoke to the quality of the build. They were tied together, they were one and the same. The women's Royal Rumble was a bit just felt like people coming out. I was like, well, yeah, the build was practically like non-existent. So it was like, yeah, that makes sense. That fits. Bianca Belair versus Piper Niven was first. Was it time to once again hit the big strong Bianca lifts up Niven spot? Yes. Yes, it was. But they did set that story right out of the gate with Belair immediately going for a KOD attempt. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, okay, so we're telling that story again. It's like, oh, yeah. Can Bianca Belair lift Piper Niven? How can she do it? It's like, I've seen it so many times. So at least at this time, it felt like she went for it immediately knowing she can do it. And started to get fend off, so she actually had to tie up Piper first. Not that the commentary were hitting on that story, so I like that was included, but often if you want to know what story are WWE actually telling, just listen to the commentators. They don't make things subtle in WWE. They will tell you. But it felt like through the commentary that the story was more about, can Bianca Belair do it? Can she lift Piper Niven? How is she going to qualify against such a big competitor? I got to see a nice little building flow, but the pace was fast once back on air. Piper up in the corner as they teased the KOD once again, but it was the third time that was the charm, getting the big pop, it always does. And speaking of big pops, Alexa Bliss versus Candice LeRae was the other one. Candice LeRae, jobber to the stars, no pop in the Rumble. Bliss, whose first name I can't say because my Amazon Echo is in the room and I've not turned it off, on the same brand as the Spooky Family. I do realise after just doing that bit that I said her name in the match things and my Echo didn't react, so, oh, I got lucky. Both Bliss and Flair haven't really existed on Trip's telly, so here's another character I'm interested to see how she gets handled. And honestly, LeRae is kind of the perfect opponent for her to return against. You know you're in good hands with her, even if WWE crowds are kind of on her. And immediately, Bliss is in a match, wrestling competitively. It's like, oh, but I just didn't see this from her for what feels like a long time. And she had that mini stretch where she was basically a normal person coming out with the doll, where she would be competing on Monday Night Raw. But as far as I can remember, that was building up to a SummerSlam match. It was still filled with spooky stuff. So even though she was doing in-ring competitive stuff, it was hinting at spooky times. But now it just felt like this was like a genuine match. She didn't do anything spooky. Spooky things happened around the match, around the production, but she didn't actually do anything. It's just been so long since we've seen that kind of Bliss in a ring. Like, don't worry, we got Wyatt Flicker on screen briefly, and she won with an inverted Sister Abigail called the Abigail DDT. It's like, oh, that actually describes it pretty well. You do the flip, but because she's got the arm under the head, it turns into a DDT. It's like, oh, that's nice, that's nice. Wade Barrett described her past propelling her to the future. There you go. Want to know what story they're telling? Just listen to the commentary. You don't have to prophesize and come up with stuff. They're literally telling you. It's not that difficult. So maybe it's more spooky adjacent? Wyatt influenced, but no supernatural powers. But we did get that flicker on screen, so there's going to be Wyatt stuff. The Wyatts have been moved over to SmackDown, which is why I immediately assumed that that's why she's on the brand. But this is more like a welcome back, even though it was a chamber qualifying match. It felt more like here's a quick little showcase performance for you. And then immediately onto the other notes of SmackDown, which was just like that reverberation. The Party Girls, they're now on Smackers. I guess the downside of the 3 hours era is you get more mid-card matches that WWE doesn't really care about themselves. I'll care about them when you give me a reason to care, WWE. Carmelo Hayes faced Akira Tozawa in Akira's Revenge. Hayes, the overly cocky man. Can you guess where this went? Wrong! Melo just beat him. It's like, oh yeah, of course he did. Of course Melo just beat Akira Tozawa. None of that momentum stopping a promising young lad we used to get in the previous era. Kamado Hayes was losing this match because, oh what a moment, oh isn't that funny. Completely destroying his momentum long term. we would no longer be taking him seriously. FTR destroyed by DX. They never felt the same again. It's like, oh it's just a short little period, they'll come back again. Never did. Destroyed. Momentum gone. Lost. Whilst here in this situation, it's like, oh yeah, no. It makes sense that Melo would just beat him. DIY got an in-ring promo from the tag division? Like, you know it must be Mania season when they suddenly give a shit about the tag team division. Not long before, Eldis booked them in a surprise tag against the interrupting Yes Boys. Pretty deadly. The Miz on Smackers 2, failing to make friends or have anyone's respect. Damian Priest got a backstage interview interrupted by Strowman, setting up their Elimination Chamber qualifier with Jacob Fatu next week. There's some characters where I'm not entirely sure of whether they needed it or not. I like the idea, title-wise, of Drew being able to go for Cody. I like that. Like, feud-wise, what was there left for Drew? What was there left for Drew after WrestleMania? Because he felt so heavily involved in the CM Punk's throne and stuff. But evidently they don't want him to. It's just, what else is he going to do? You shift him to a different show. He's got a whole plethora new faces to go up against. But for Damian Priest, it felt like the move made a lot more sense. He was one of those characters where on Raw, he's just kind of stuck. And I don't see him being able to break through into that realm where he's challenging Cody for the title. But you never know, this could be like a character refresh that's desperately needed. Like getting him away from Judgment Day and Ripley and that lot, I thought was desperately needed. But yes, he'll be facing Strowman and Jacob Fatu in a Big Boys Bash Chamber qualifier next week. Kevin Owens was back in his car. A quick video talking about making Sammy pay. And finally, Machine Guns got a locker room promo directed at the Street Profits. But in the meantime, it's Angel Umberto. We'll get the Profits, that'll be fine. So this was the SmackDown after the Royal Rumble. The phrase I will use is that it was a reverberation from Monday Night Raw, which meant that it didn't have anywhere near the same animosity or excitement, but it was needed in terms of what setting up what happens next. And that's the same for what we talk about with Raw as well. That Monday Night Raw, to a bigger degree, was even more of a just setting stuff up for what comes next. All of these beats feel like they are necessary for the road to WrestleMania. It just means that the show isn't particularly great or isn't exciting. It's competent, and I much prefer this compared to what we were getting before Trips Times. But yeah, it's still like, if you didn't watch this episode, you could get quick like highlights of, oh yeah, this person qualified for that and this person chose this. But it's like, after that, it's like there's still like 2.5 hours of a show. So, not really worth watching this week's Raw. With SmackDown, if you watch Monday Night Raw, there's no point watching Smackers. But anyway, let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw as we stay in Tennessee, but go on over to Music Times Nashville. That's not a nickname for it. I know they do country music in Nashville. I know. I know my America. I know my America well. Let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw live on Netflix.
Me and you at WrestleMania.
Let's go!
Jey Uso makes his choice after a week of dilly-dallying, of doing more yeet arm movements with adorable kids in the crowd. Then another encore, the man finally chooses Gunther, leaning in to this new conditioned crowd reaction perfectly to allow the Austrian to attack during Uso's announce desk encore yeetings. It's like, oh, yes! You use this immediately conditioned thing. Instead of being like, look how cool we are, we're just going to keep doing it each week and just say how cool we are on commentary whilst doing it. It's like, no, you immediately like do the encore again, get the crowd to do that again, and immediately use it to our advantage. It's like, yes, this is how you use it. So much heat from the crowd for Gunther as he beat the man up in the ring. They wanted their encore, damn it. Officials ran out as Gunther was telling Jey, don't do it, don't pick me. I guess they realised Jey kind of needed an inciting moment to really go after Gunther over Cody, because he had that history with Gunther, and that's what he was leaning off when talking to Cody. But also, Cody is the bigger championship, so it's either something personal over the biggest glory. So this here was the incident to convince you this is why Jey Uso would specifically go for Gunther, and the crowd bought it. As Gunther walked up the ramp, the beaten lad grabbed the mic. I choose you, Pikachu. Me and you at WrestleMania. To a huge pop. I may have paraphrased a bit there. The crowd reacting real well with yeets galore for the dive and mini brawl afterwards. Job done. Success. Crowd reaction tells you everything. Then, reality hits. We've done this segment, and in a huge surprise to me, this segment was done with like 12 minutes into the show. Like, oh, cool. That's all. By the time that Jey Uso had even started speaking last week, we were 12 minutes in. Yes, he gave me his time so he could kind of soak in the win from his Royal Rumble. But I'm just kind of making a point at how smooth and quick this segment all ran through. Like, it's really well paced segment, and it really got the crowd on their side. But unfortunately, after this segment ends, this is the biggest talking point from the show, and it was a white hot reaction from the crowd. Then there's the rest of the show. So, oh cool, you got it done in 12 minutes. Oh, that means there's still like 2 hours and 48.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Content. Shit. What do we fill this time with? Last week we had 12 minutes of Jey Uso just yeeting with the crowd, getting all emotional before he'd even said a single word. Like, oh, that used up so much time. Now you finish the segment before you even got to the point of him saying anything. It's like, oh no. And that was my Raw review. That's how I felt about the show. It's like, hot starting segment, then, oh shit, what about the rest of the show? Damn it. So the first thing I want to talk about is AJ Styles' Raw return. It's like, oh yeah, it was nice. The Phenomenal One is back, his ninth year in WWE, which still feels crazy. Good riddance to his Death Rebel song. We're back to We Don't Want None. Cut jab to the Nashville crowd chanting his name. He's still got something to prove. And look at that, he's in his ring gear. How lovely and convenient. Dom Dom was the man to interrupt, but he and Carlito, the ones to get beaten up by AJ, who then, backstage later, said to Pierce, like, no, I don't just want this match. I need this match. Is that Dom is fine. Fine, whatever. Like, Pierce being like, no, you don't want to do this, AJ. I would take it more in the context of, are you sure? There are so many people you could go after. Are you sure on Dominic Mysterio? Like, you could go for much bigger fish. But if you really want to, well, I'm not going to stop you. And then straight into the Elimination Chamber qualifiers. And this is what I mean by, hey, you could have like not watched the show, it'd be fine. Like, it's nice to see AJ back and cutting his promo. That was nice. But the main key point is he's then set up a match with Dominic Mysterio. Like, information you can use for next week. You don't need to watch the show. And the Chamber qualifying matches themselves were all right. Like, they were fine. The weakest of the three qualifying matches they've done so far. The first one to talk about was the main event. And I feel like it was a main event that really fitted how the show went. Rey Mysterio versus the transphobe. Like, lol at Punk having cut a wee promo beforehand, meaning as the transphobe walked out to the ring, you could hear Punk go, I didn't know whose music this was. Generally, didn't know. Plenty of booing. Rey doing a good enough job, but the man kind of fit the very much nothing episode of Raw. A match that was absolutely fine to cut to a drone shot of the Mania logo during. And you've not missed anything. It's fine. It's all right. In the end, 619 was hot, but the splash hit the knees. Straight punch and a suplex rotating into a DDT for the win. Hit really smooth. Irritating that he's so good at this. As soon as I watched that, I'm like, you can't hit that on most of the roster. It's not going to work. Like, Rey, he's awesome. Obviously, you can hit that on Rey. But so many on this roster, you're not hitting that on Roman. Absolutely not. Deva Punk's not flipping over for you to be able to do that. On the men's side, Bayley versus Lyra Valkyria. Lyra, the women's intercontinental champion. Good thing, because that appears to be her last win for a good long while. At least she actually got featured on television and got shown to show in-ring character here. Lyra doing wrestle times, the crowd going mild. Like, WWE crowds really do not care about folk doing the wrestles good. Bayley sunset flip, buckle bomb. Into the corner had Bayley herself going back first into that bottom turnbuckle. Never mind where Valkyria then ends up hitting. Lyra given the chops to meet Bayley's elbow with knees and to kick out of the Bayley to belly, causing the veteran star to have to innovate, aka the best they've done at giving the first women's intercontinental champion any form of stock since winning the title. Even the women's Royal Rumble, she had her beat with Ivy Nile thrown out like an absolute geek. It was like, oh, your first women's IC title. It was like, oh. A lovely rope-draped leg drop from Lyra after Crazy Bayley went for another belly that would have crashed them to the outside. Neither lass able to finish by hitting their signatures. In the end, Bayley just seat-belting Valkyria for the sudden pin win. The champion loses again, but they actually booked her in a competitive showing. It's only been like 2 months or however long it's been. She won the title and, well, you're just going to appear backstage now with the title. And they're going, oh look, there's the women's IC title champion. It's like, oh yeah, it's her. She gonna wrestle? What? No. Got bigger stars. Of course not. And the World Tag Team Championship was on the line. War Raiders versus American Maid in the most WWE telly booking of a tag title match you ever did, Dan, see. It was a nice surprise that this kicked off the final hour, but then as the match progressed, I found out why. The crowd evidently tired and not really reacting at this point, just ready for the main event. But I'd had a break. I watched this in bites over the course of Wednesday and had a much better time with this than the crowd seemed to have. But the crowd read the room way better than I had. They'd read the flow of the show and they were like, ah, it's probably going to end in bullshit, so, you know, let's just move on. A nice touch with the Creed wearing their circa 2003 Kurt Angle singlets. The champs with a standard flow of control into and through the ad break. Then the villains after it, because you gotta build that hot tag for Ivar. And this is what I mean by standard flow. A perfectly alright tag telly bout. But he hinted at a next gear after that hot tag flow hit top rope turbulence. Ivy Nile on the apron with an awesome pop-up from Julius and a nice moonsault from the other Creed 2. That quick flash earned than this is awesome. Right on the verge of that next gear. WWE booking time. Title belt shot to the face from Julius and a quick DQ finish because we've got to quickly get to a Judgment Day backstage segment. It's like, okay, like, you've given the false finish, you've set up the finish from the Raiders, also countered by the baddie team. Like, okay, well, now we're going to see something new. We're going to kick up into this next gear. Nope, it's a WWE title, a teddy title match. So immediately hit with a shot. It's like, oh, we're going to make a statement. By the DQ? It's WWE title logic. Like, in a more competitive scenario, they cost themselves their own title match back to the queue. But in WWE logic, it's like, oh, sent a statement by hitting them on the back of the head. Like, oh, yeah, I've got to fight them again. They're like, yeah, but they cost themselves the match. So, like, are they idiots? You just move on. On to the other notes. Women's World Champion Rhea Ripley gave Io a title shot because the Aussie was sad. Sorry, I mean, I'm giving you a shot because I want to. After last week that Ripley accidentally interfered into the match with Io to give Liv Morgan a bit of a hokey win because she's not allowed to win clean. She's got to win hokily. But it's leading into Rhea Ripley versus Io Sky at the Chamber. As a European, aside from consumer protection rights, what other bonuses do I get? It's the New Day, out in the crowd getting booed resoundingly. Something called the McAfee Minute. Pat cutting jab to the crowd with distorted guitar, generic riff song playing in the crowd, telling the crowd it's Cole's birthday. It wasn't. Getting them to sing happy birthday to him. Wasn't his birthday. A-Town down under, backstage with Kathy, riffing on Sheamus. One week they'll actually be booked on the show. And finally, Penta was on main event this week. Record time. But he did get a VTR promo play, setting up his match with Ludwig Kaiser, who then got a chin wag himself. But I'm going to beat you, Penta. But yeah, that was Monday Night Raw. Very clip notes. As in, me riffing through it like that was probably a much better way to consume the show than watching it yourself. The Jey Uso segment was hot. That really got the crowd going and they were really into that. But then there's 2 hours 48 remaining. And it was very much, the notes I bashed through there was like, yeah, that's what you need to know. Yeah, so it was a SmackDown, which was that reverberation from Raw after the Rumble, which did all right in carrying that momentum. Then this Monday Night Raw here, it set up the character notes, it continued to set up the Chamber, but in terms of like the show itself, very tepid. Very much just a show that was on. Especially like if I were to come to my recording today, because recording on a Thursday, like Dynamite aired last night, I feel this week way hotter about AEW than I do about WWE, even though it logically makes sense where they're going for the Chamber. Now, I know WWE are properly heating up for WrestleMania and they feel like this big white-hot product, but this week specifically, Raw was just tepid, and I had a much better time with AEW. But anyway, that brings me to the end of the show. I told you it'd be a quick one. It's going to be the same again next week. I've learned the flow now with Triple H. We can be in Canada for the SmackDown beforehand. That's something I do like, is having the SmackDown before the pay-per-view be in the same city or even the same stadium sometimes. It works really well for their shows abroad. You get to see what the crowd's going to be like for the pay-per-view, which means you get a white-hot SmackDown, which is great. So we're going to get a Canadian SmackDown before the Chamber. But yeah, I'm not expecting a super exciting show for me to talk about next week. So anyway, with that, I say thank you for liking, rating, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciate it, never take it for granted. I'll be back this time next week to talk about SmackDown and Monday Night Raw. Prove me wrong, WWE. Prove me wrong that I'm not about to set up to review another tepid week of build. So anyway, with that, I bid you adieu.
Adios.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with. Like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.